music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Get ready to hear from Grammy Award-winning group Clean Bandit, who have been tearing up the charts with their brand of classical dance music featured on songs like Rather Be and Real Love. We talk about their rise to fame and working with real instruments in the dance world. We also welcome back to the show DJ and producer team The Angry Kids, chatting about their EP called Sworn, and wrap up with Vancouver-based rock band Pigeon Park and their new release called Stripes, and opening up for Aerosmith. We're very happy to welcome Grammy Award-winning group Clean Bandit to the show. This group has been making waves the last couple of years, especially with the release of their hit song, Rather Be. We're joined by original founding member Grace Chatto. Grace, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks so much.
So, Grace, can we talk a little bit about how you and the guys actually came together to form Clean Bandit?
Yeah, it was about 7 years ago now. I've known Neil since I was a really young child. We used to play violin and cello together in an orchestra in London, and then we set up a string quartet and started playing classical music together when we were kind of teenagers. And then I met Jack, who at the time was my boyfriend, and we kind of really close and wanted to make some music together. And he came to all of our classical concerts, and one day he just kind of had the idea of adding electronic elements to the classical music we were playing. And the initial songs we had were kind of full classical pieces, but with beats and bass lines that he had written, and then one of our friends singing over the top. And then gradually we started writing our own string parts and moved towards the kind of the house beats that you hear in Rather Be and Real Love.
How does it feel like to know that you guys, in a way, like, I feel like you've almost created like a different genre of music? You know, it's not that we haven't heard, I guess, classical music before with beats, but it just seems like you guys have taken it to the next level.
Yeah, it's weird. It is really weird because we never planned to make a new genre. It was never really a big idea to mix this type of music with another type of music, but it was just kind of quite organic because we were kind of in love and friends. We wanted to do something together, and that was kind of what we were both thinking at the time. So, you know, we were doing the classical thing and he was experimenting with electronic music, and that's why we kind of just like joined them together. And yeah, it's kind of quite a happy coincidence that seems to have worked. Well, not a coincidence. I mean, Jack has this kind of clever imagination that he just kind of somehow mixes loads of different styles of music together, and always seems to sound good, even though on paper you'd kind of think it might be a car crash.
When you guys were actually working on your hit song, Rather Be, did you know that you had something special? Did you feel that it was a song that could take off?
Yes, actually. I remember just traveling on the subway with Jack in London, and he was just playing around on his laptop on the train. And he gave me a pair of headphones and played me that riff, that in the end turned out to be the big kind of string riff. And when I heard it, I thought, oh, wow, that's really very catchy. I kept thinking of it over and over again. And then we started, when we finished the song, we started performing it at festivals around the UK. And we tried recording it with loads of different singers, and all the performances we did at festivals seemed to go down really well, and people were kind of singing along to the no bit, like, before they even knew it, you know. And then we recorded it about a year after that when we met Jess Glynn, and we thought we'd try it with her. And that recording kind of seemed to be everyone's favorite, and we decided to release it.
Do you find that with what you guys do and then with her vocals, it really does seem like it was lightning in a bottle, especially with regards to Rather Be and then Real Love, which I know you worked with her again?
Yeah, I mean, I think I love her voice. I think it's so powerful and kind of rich, like, in tone. I mean, I loved other recordings we made of Rather Be as well, but yeah, that one is great too.
Now, Clean Bandit definitely seems to enjoy collaborating with vocalists like Jess Glynn. Is there someone out there right now in the pop world that you guys would love to record a song with?
Yeah, loads of people. I'm a big fan of Miley Cyrus, and I think we could make something really amazing with her. Rihanna also, we would love to work with her. I think they're both of them, actually, there's a kind of humour, I think, in their music that attracts me a lot, and the kind of powerful voices that I think are often overlooked because of the way they are perceived as women. But I was really struck by Rihanna when we watched her at the Grammys, like, what an incredible singer she is. And who else? Loads of people. We'd also love to work with Bjork.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Joining us on the show is Grace Chatto from the hit UK band Clean Bandit. Make sure to check out their website, cleanbandit.co.uk. What's it like for you, Grace, being in a band with a bunch of boys? Are you sort of the voice of reason?
Well, I don't really identify as different to them, if you see what I mean. A lot of people ask me that. I don't really think that being a girl makes me different. But also there are other girls around because we feature different vocalists on every song, like Jess Glynn, etc. A lot of them are women, actually, on the album, and lots of female voices. So when we tour, we actually tour with three female singers. So there are actually more girls than boys.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so cool. And what's it like sort of popping these vocalists in and out of your set?
It's fun. It's really, it gives such a creative freedom because you can kind of call on different voices, a bit like calling upon different instruments, you know, and it just changes the sound a lot. But the front of the show is a singer called Elizabeth Troy, who kind of started in the garage, UK garage world, and we kind of loved a lot of her music, and she sings most of the lead parts, and then people kind of come in and out. I sing one of the songs called Come Over, and then Neil's going to sing another song called Dust Clears, and it's quite fun, I think, switching it up, and no one really knows what to expect.
Now, not that you would need to do this, but if you could change places for a day with any other band or artist, who would it be and why?
It's quite hard because I play the cello and not many bands really require that. But I think two of my favourite bands growing up were No Doubt and Ace of Base. So I'd love to be part of either of those.
That's amazing. Now, what can people expect to see from your stage show when they see you guys perform?
Well, I think it's often a surprise to people how many live instruments there are and how many different voices there are and stuff like that, because I think people kind of coming to the music through the bar to be sometimes, through like hearing it on the radio, sometimes assume that it's maybe more of a DJ setup. Whereas actually is live violin, live cello, live keyboards, drums, all the drums are live, some bass guitar in some songs. I play these kind of electronic steel drums as well. And then, loads of singing. It's very dancey. We like kind of dancing loads and everyone seems to join in with us. So it's quite a fun atmosphere.
You guys won a Grammy this year for your hit song, Rather Be. How does it feel to know that you guys are actually a Grammy award-winning group? Is it, you know, a real sense of accomplishment? What does it feel like? Has it changed anything?
Yeah, it's kind of weird to connect with it, actually. Like, in the moment when it happened, it felt really crazy, and my heart was beating so fast, and it was really exciting. And since then, I guess it does feel like a big achievement. And it's something that we were never kind of aiming for. Like, we started as a live band and we did gigs together that I would just put on around London and Cambridge in the UK. And it was all about just playing live for about 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, we were just having loads of fun with that. And then we decided to record stuff. And then for one of the recordings to then win a Grammy, it was crazy.
That's amazing. I think you guys should be so proud of yourselves, especially because I feel like you guys have really just brought this excitement to the scene. And again, just having all those live instruments, I think you're bringing a lot of credibility to EDM in a way, even though it didn't really, you know, need it, because I think it's an amazing genre on its own. But just to prove that you can actually have live instruments with a beat and do what you're doing, it's fantastic. What is up next for Clean Bandit after the tour is over?
Well, the tour seems to be never ending, firstly, because... We're back for Glastonbury Festival next week, and then loads of festivals in Europe and the UK, and then coming back to North America in September, I think, and then South America, and then Asia. So it's kind of going on quite a while. And then we're kind of writing new music around the touring. Like, Zach is constantly just, you never really see him without a pair of headphones and his laptop. Like on the bus, he's just writing stuff all the time. And yeah, we've got some really exciting new music that, again, is kind of like, if you listen to our album New Eyes, it's kind of got so many different styles of music. I think you wouldn't really just say it's classical mixed with EDM or whatever. It's like there's reggae, kind of house, UK garage, drum and bass, folk even. And he's actually from a jazz background, Jack, so I think there's going to be more kind of like improvised lines in this album, and it is still kind of going off in loads of different styles of music, because like working with different vocalists, like when we get in the studio with them, their kind of style and their style kind of affects what we come up with. So yeah, we've kind of pulled around in loads of different styles, and for me that's really exciting, especially when we then come to play it live, because it's like never monotonous, you know.
Grace, thank you so much. You've been amazing.
Thank you. Thanks. Great to talk to you.
That's Grace Chatto of Clean Bandit. Again, make sure to check out their website, cleanbandit.co.uk.
Hey, this is Grace from Clean Bandit, and you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're a thousand miles from comfort. We have traveled land and sea. But as long as you are with me, there's no place I'd rather be. I would wait forever, exalted in the sea. As long as I am with you, my heart can take. With every step we take, Kyoto to the bay, strolling so casually. We're different and the same, gave you another name, switch up. place I'd rather be. Yeah.
Find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com.
We're happy to welcome back to the show some amazing Canadian talent from the world of electronic dance music, or EDM. As it's known, the Angry Kids are a DJ production remix team who've worked on projects for Tiësto, 30 Seconds to Mars, Lights, Victoria Duffield, and the list goes on and on. They're also a staple on Canadian radio for the Hit Fix and their latest creation, the EDM Top 10. On top of all that, they've released new music, their Sworn EP featuring a tantalizing song called Battle featuring Bell Humble. Ryan Willock and Jeff Beck, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, thanks. Awesome to be here. And wow, that makes it sound like we're really busy.
You're very busy, guys. It's hard to keep up. I'm so glad I follow you on the social media, so I kind of know what's going on. If we can start with, I guess, the fact that the last time you were on the show, you had just released your debut album, The Angry Kids. And I guess I would ask each of you individually, what did you learn both personally and professionally from that experience?
I learned that I shouldn't sing on tape and that we need to get some better people who write better lyrics than we do. And that we needed collaborators because we just thought we could get better with better lyrics and better vocalists. We could definitely make some better music. And we find that the jump between what happened on the first record to what's on this EP is it's a complete 180-degree turn in excellence, I think.
Jeff, how do you feel about it?
Oh, I'm good. The thing that I learned, though, I was going to say, is that I work better under a deadline. That's, you know, I kind of figured that out. When you have all the time in the world and all the choices of what you could do, you know, nothing ever gets done. But, like, when you actually set out to finish something, I work better that way.
This is
good.
Yeah,
I think it's neat.
He also works better when I'm standing behind him with a whip.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's always that.
I wanted to ask you this. The last time we had you on, you know, it was sort of brought to light that you both work remotely from one another. One's in Toronto, one's in Calgary. Is that still the case?
Absolutely.
And so obviously it's still working well, that way of doing things. And I know that last time we spoke, also you guys had mentioned that you have the same gear and everything's hooked up the same, so you can each go in and do what you need to do without messing anybody up.
Yeah, exactly. And it works out actually better that way. I think that we've joked about it before, but, you know, I think in all seriousness, we may kill each other if we lived in the same town. So the fact that we work remotely, I think, helps us in our process.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you, being in Calgary and working on EDM, it kind of sounds like that doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Like, for people who don't know, and I'm sure there's a thriving EDM scene in Calgary, but I think for some people, they'd be like, oh, it's all Cowtown music, but obviously not the case.
Yeah, and I think thriving is a generous word. there are definitely some people here who are into it, and, you know, they've got some really good festivals that happen around here. But generally speaking, no, there isn't a giant Calgary EDM scene. So a lot of people are surprised that I'm here rather than, you know, being somewhere like Toronto where there's definitely more of that going on.
Have you ever felt the need to go, though, Jeff, like to move out of Calgary, even to go to Vancouver? Or no, you're good there?
No, I'm good here. I thought about the Vancouver move a couple times, but you know, there's something about Calgary. Born and raised here, and probably a Calgary lifer.
Okay, Ryan, do you think that Canada actually has a healthy EDM scene? Because I know out east here, like where I am in Montreal, we've noticed, you know, more festivals coming in. Like, we just have a new one that started last year and it went well, so they're bringing it back, Il Sonique, which happens in August. How do you find EDM overall in Canada? Because obviously it's huge in the States and overseas.
I think it depends how you define health.
Okay.
When we look at other territories and countries where we have friends in, there seems to be a certain camaraderie amongst people. And here I find that it's harder to set that. It's more more of a everybody working to get up on one another rather than help each other out. And I think that's kind of holding Canada back a little bit. But as far as bringing in foreign talent and having festivals, yeah, sure. I think it's definitely growing. It's definitely becoming a major city center type of, you know, festival. And the most intriguing thing to me is I found out that there are some quite remote festivals happening, like Manitoulin Island is having their own EDM festival this year, which kind of shows how it's growing in the country as a whole.
Wow, that's crazy. That's amazing. I'm so impressed. I was there when I was like 8 years old, and it seems really far, so I'm glad EDM is spreading its wings.
I only know where it is because we started broadcasting our show in Thunder Bay last week, and had a couple people speaking to us on Twitter, and they're like, you're going to be in Manitoulin. I'm like, well, where is Manitoulin Island?
That's awesome. Joining us on the show are DJs and remixers Ryan and Jeff from The Angry Kids. Make sure to check them out on their website, theangrykids.com. You brought up the radio show, so I want to talk about that. First of all, I know on the station that I work for, we played the Hit Fix for the longest time. Now you guys have the EDM Top 10. Where did the idea come for that, and does it take a lot of time for you to produce?
The EDM Top 10 was kind of an idea that built upon your last question, where we're looking at the fact that, you know, there is a dance scene, or, you know, somewhat of a EDM scene, if you want to call it, in Canada. And for the longest time, everything was kind of dictated by record pools and the Canadian National Dance Chart. And since the absence of that, I think there's been a little bit of a gap in what songs are actually working here. So I decided that we would be the people who would start making the official chart and start pulling different resources and getting, you know, the newest tracks to debut and, you know, speak to people about what was their, you know, what's their favorite remix of the day and things like that to get on the show, and also having a little bit of history with having an EDM classic, which is a track, you know, nearly more than 8 years old that was fit right into the genre today. And it was a little bit of a labor of love for us to develop. It took take us about almost 10 months to get the formula down properly.
And how's it going? Like you said, it debuted in Ontario. So where else can people find it?
Right now we're on in London right now, and we're currently speaking and accepting other stations who would like to have us on. But right now we're on in London, Ontario, on Virgin Radio actually, and we're looking to grow some others very, very soon.
Awesome. And so it's a weekly show, obviously. So how long does it take you guys to produce it?
I think the longest part of the time is getting the research right. You know, we probably spend a good solid day going through charts, going through resources, looking at requests, looking at emails, analyzing like spins charts, you know, and talking to you, other friends in the field. And, you know, once we've got the list together, mm-hmm. actually putting the show together goes, you know, real time. But it's probably the research that's the longest time, and something I think Ryan and I really put some effort into. I think DJs get a bad rap bad rep for being lazy sometimes. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to break that by, you know, better music through research. You know, like we spend the time to get the show laid out right before we actually make it.
Awesome.
And at the same time, also maintaining a tastemaker aspect of the show by, you know, every week we have the EDM breaker on there. And so far, I think we're pretty much batting 1,000 with songs that we pick as our breakers coming onto the chart, especially the sales charts and the radio charts within a couple weeks after we pick it. We've been doing pretty good.
And where are you guys, you know, because I love EDM, and, you know, I do sections of it on my show, depending on who I'm interviewing and stuff. And I can just imagine the time spent trying to find these songs and sort of knowing where you're at. Is it a lot of like Beatport stuff and sort of finding out what's going on overseas? Because I find a lot of my research takes me overseas.
Beatport would be actually the last place we'd look.
Oh, really, eh? Okay.
Yeah, we're more looking at you know, at songs that are coming out overseas or things that are coming out, and a lot of it arrives in our inbox. Some stuff we have to source out, try and find something, you know, to listen to, and ask people for copies. Usually oblige. A couple people have said, you know, you have to wait till it comes out, which we say, okay, well then, I guess you're not going to get on the show. So there's a bit of work, but you know, we've been doing this for a long time. We tend to have a good pulse on what is coming, and usually by the time it hits Beatport, you know, at the stage where it's either going to, you know, be A or nay. Some things take time, but Beatport would maybe be somewhere we might scour for a remix we can't get our hands on or something like that.
Okay.
I was going to say that part of the research is weeding through marketing campaigns because, you know, now that music is pretty much distributed through the internet, you know, the way labels and artists do marketing these days are different than they used to be. And you kind of have to keep an eye out for that. And you'll see sometimes you'll see a track come out of nowhere and shoot to the number one of Beatport because somebody has bought, you know, 1,000 copies of it or something, you know, so you got to know when it's charting because somebody's paid for a position basically, or if it's actually there, you know, legitimately and organically.
Now, I wanted to ask you about, you know, you guys obviously remix. Who do you guys enjoy listening to? You know, is it like the Devo Days of the world? Like, who do you guys sort of love to hear and to know that there's new music coming from?
Dance-wise?
Yeah.
I think it'll go kind of the producer du jour that we both like. And there's, you know, each one of us have our longtime favorites and current favorites. And right now, if I had to say, who do I like what they're doing right now? Jeff's going to know who I'm going to say, so I'm just going to let him say who it is.
I have no idea.
Because it changes all the time, right? But I'm still stuck.
Yeah, all the time.
Still stuck on Syncool.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh yeah. Syncool. Yeah, that's definitely a good one.
Go ahead, Jeff. Who do you
I have no idea how I would answer that myself either.
Okay. Joining us on the show are DJs and remixers Ryan and Jeff from The Angry Kids. Check out their website, theangrykids.com. So the new EP called Sworn, explain the title and what you were trying to accomplish with this set of tracks. I'll start with you, Jeff.
Naming an EP is way harder than it sounds like it would be. You know, you want to find something that kind of represents you and represents what you do and, you know, groups things together well. And, you know, there's no secret that Ryan and for a certain extent, me too, have a bit of a potty mouth. And I always liked the fact that we thought that sworn was the past tense of swear.
Okay.
there was an alternate meaning, though. Another meaning of it was that we're sworn and we're sworn in and we're committed to what we do, which is to, I don't know, swear or make music, whichever way you want to put it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And how long did it take for you guys to put this particular EP together?
It was a while coming together, but I think mostly because it was just took a while to get the pieces together.
Okay.
You know, once we started working with some, a really great songwriter and we got some vocalists, then it was a matter of getting them to get that stuff recorded and, you know, get the parts together. And then once everything was together, you know, it came together over a period of several months. But all told, from the time we first said, hey, we need to make new music, to the time it was out was probably a year or more.
And I know it's an EP, so it's not obviously not a full-length album, but, you know, putting this collection of songs together, obviously the single that we're going to talk about in just a second, Battle, what's your position, and I want to hear both of your positions on this, with regards to the fact that it seems like in the grand scheme of things, it's a singles market these days. And I remember speaking to Crystal Waters, obviously house diva, legend, everyone knows who she is. And, you know, mm-hmm. She was telling me, you know, that everyone keeps, you know, wanting an album from her. And she says, you know, right now I just need to keep pumping out solid singles because that's where it's at. Would you agree or disagree with that statement? I'll start with you, Ryan.
I'm gonna agree. I look back at, you know, the 50s and the 60s when people would release a single and try and rush down and put it on vinyl and get it out ASAP. And the album right now is becoming something where no one's gonna buy an album unless there's, you know, 12 or 13 amazing tracks. And even then, they have the ability to pick and choose what they want. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So why not make a bunch of singles and then package them together for a cheaper price at the end and, you know, make it more attractive. I think the single is definitely the way to go, and you're going to see more and more people doing it that way, I believe.
Jeff?
Well, and I was going to cite an example of, take Skrillex, for example. You know, he had, five or six EPs out before he put a full album together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by the time that album came out, he was already at the peak of his success. It saddens me that, like, the packaged album doesn't exist in the same form that it used to, or at least is becoming less and less so. But, you know, everybody's, you know, wants stuff now. So, you know, the EP is the best way, or, you know, a group of singles is the best way to kind of get things out faster and get things to people fast.
Was it an easy decision to release the track Battle, which is featuring Bell Humble? Like, you know, did you guys know right away that track stuck out to you?
Well, it was a decision was made pretty much. It was supposed to be released as a single well before the EP came together, and we worked on it. We're finished, and it just kind of took some time for it to see the light of day.
Okay.
So it It was well earmarked as a single before we even started working on the rest of it, pretty much.
And
yeah,
how
and
you,
I think
yeah,
that the sorry, I was just going to add to that the fact that, you know, once we were done the, you know, audio production of Battle, and we kind of sat back and looked at it, and the label listened to it, and all of us kind of agreed it needed a video. Like it was really kind of best presented in that type of format. And, you know, at that point, then once the song's done, to start looking for video treatments and get a director and, you know, produce the video, that's kind of what took time before the actual record came out.
Do you think you guys are going to head more in that direction down the line, like having more videos and sort of presenting it not only like audio-wise but visually as well?
Kind of the plan is to have the visual component. With this one, we got really, really, really lucky that you know, we found Alon Marcel Ciano, who produced the video, who wanted to make a statement and linked with us with a very, you know, not a large budget, but was able to find people who are willing to work to make this statement with him. And it just came out to be this wonderful, wonderful video with not a huge budget, but a lot of people lending hands to kind of help us out. It was really nice seeing a bunch of very talented people work together for something they were passionate about.
Last time we had you on, we also talked about, you know, who you're working with sort of vocally wise. And I'm wondering if you're still of the mind, and I'm sure it's obviously evolved, but is it still important for you guys to work with new talent, or are you looking for more established talent at this point?
I would say a bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, we have favorites, and we have some people that, you know, we would love to get to the point where we could do something with, but I think you have to be successful enough to have them take your call.
Right.
but the other hand of it is, you know, working with some, you know, relatively unknown or you know, sort of new to our scene artists is great, because you could be there, you know, as their success starts to rise as well.
And also, my thought is, when we look at, you know, who the vocalist is, you can get the most established, talented vocalist in the world, you know, whoever it is, but if the song sucks, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the song's got to be good. That's the most important part. Like, you can go and, you know, grab a vocal from Madonna, but if the song sucks, there's no point in having her name or wasting the affiliation there.
Right. And is there anyone right now, whether they're up-and-comers like or established acts, that you would be like, yeah, like, this would be amazing, you know, if we could hook up?
Well, you could put a longer list of people together who you'd always you know, love to work with. You don't want people to see or, you know, think you're unrealistic. The one, I guess one of them was on the EP. We had the pleasure to work with Bob Marley again on next record, and that's someone who I hold really really dear to my heart. It's an idol of mine, actually. So that's pretty exciting. Other than that, you'd be really digging and looking at, you know, you'd be guessing, I guess. That's my opinion.
Is there ever a time where you look at some Canadian talent that's doing another genre of music, and you'd be like, wow, it would be awesome to hear them, you know, do what we do? Like, I'm just throwing this out there, but let's say it was a Serena Ryder, or let's say an Avril Lavigne, just, you know, obviously because they have worldwide recognition at this point. But does that ever happen? You're like, oh, this would be interesting to see how they sound with what we do.
Now you're hitting on something. There were a couple people that we wanted to work with, and we haven't got the opportunity to speak to them yet. One of them was Ben Kowalczyk from Billy Talent.
Okay.
I think that guy's awesome. Jim Cuddy, Blue Rodeo, one of my favorite vocalists ever. And one more that I thought would be kind of neat as a throwback here is Todd Kearns from Age of Electric. I actually tried to email him, and he just ignored me.
Oh.
You're listening, Todd. I hope the eyes are better and the surgery's better, and you got my email.
Well, we'll send it out there for you, Ryan. We'll put it out in the universe. Before I let you guys go, what's up next? Obviously, you know, the EP's out. You're trying to push that, the show. What can we expect from you guys in the next, like, 6 to 8 months?
We just some more really great remixes, I think, is the immediate plan right now. Now that the EP is out and we can kind of take a little breather from writing original stuff, you know, I'd love to get back to kind of where we started and do a few really kick-ass remixes. We just last week had the ability to work with Dan Dolavsky on his record Guilty of Sin, or Guilty as Sin. And our mix is coming out here shortly, but you know, that was a lot of fun to work with and came together sort of real quick from talking to him on Twitter to, hey, here's your final mix.
Wow.
So I that's what I'd like to see us do in the next little while is focus on some remixes and while the EP is doing its thing.
Ryan?
We've earmarked a couple people we wanted to work with, but another one we really liked was Francisco Yates.
Yes. He follows me on Twitter. Should I put out a message for him?
Hey, you'll let him know. We're on the same label. We mentioned the label, and they said, nah, I don't think we can make that happen for you. So, Francisco, if you want to listen to Kelly, have your people call all people and let's do lunch.
Oh, my goodness. He's such a great kid, and I love him. I think he's amazing. And he's like, I got to interview him for Virgin Radio here in Montreal, and, man, he just is an old soul. You can see that he thinks a lot about what he's doing and a lot about even how he's going to answer your question. So I really hope that works out for you guys.
And I think he's my sheep-headed brother from another mother.
That's fantastic.
You know, my hair is pretty short right now. I do have been known to pull out the giant white guy afro every now and then.
That's amazing. I love it. Guys, thank you so much for your time. We're always happy to have you on the show.
Thanks very much for having us, Kelly.
That's DJs and remixers Ryan and Jeff from The Angry Kids. Make sure to check out their website, theangrykids.com.
Hey, I'm Jeff.
Hey, it's Ryan from The Angry Kids. And we're hanging out with Kelly Alexander on her Kelly Alexander show. And don't touch the dial.
Weight lifts on my shoulders. Seeing through the smoke and fire. At ease, I surrender. One more time. You are shelter, I am safe. You are refuge from the pain. Falling to the sun again. One did I walk with these scars on parade. You tell me that it's beautiful when I let the arm fall. The deeper I go, yeah, the more my heart craves. I know that I want it all. Been drawing lines I could not cross. Laying my weapons down before you. It's just us. You are shelter, I am safe. You are refuge from the pain. Fall into the sun again.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Twitter @KAlexanderShow.
We welcome a band that is rocking the Vancouver live scene and who have also made noise across Canada playing to crowds who enjoy their high-octane brand of rock. We're joined by lead singer Nick Weber talking about their rising career, new single Walk Alone, and new release called Stripes. Nick, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nick, can you tell us how you guys actually came together as a band?
Yeah, a few of us went to high school together. There was three of us who went to a high school and two who went to a different one. And then me and the drummer, Hunter, we actually met in a community theater program. After a while, we started playing music together and jamming in my basement. And eventually, the two groups kind of melded together once we realized we needed a few extra bodies in the room.
And what music has influenced you, you know, as a kid growing up? And do you think that it actually plays a part in the music that you guys produce today?
Definitely back in the day. I mean, all the big ones, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, all those classic rock guys, Aerosmith, and it absolutely 100% plays a part in how I write my music and you know, what ends up coming out of our band practices and stuff like that. That's definitely has a lot to do with how we play music.
How do you guys actually go about the writing process? Like, do you go off and write the lyrics? Do you guys do lyrics and music together? What's it like, you know, a writing session with Pigeon Park?
Well, I find that we kind of do things on our own, meaning that I would usually write something by myself, whether it be lyrics or music. And we would bring it into a practice the stuff that we usually play. And then at the end of the band practice, we kind of take some time to experiment and jam some stuff out, and if something feels right, then we'll make a point of finishing it.
How important was it winning the Seeds radio contest a couple of years ago? Do you think that it really pushed you guys to another level?
Absolutely. It opened a lot of doors for us, too. The Fox has been really nice to us, and they really gave us a big opportunity, and it was just about whether or not we were going to take it and run with it, or if we were going to let it slip away.
Do you believe that Pigeon Park has a distinct sound, or are you constantly evolving and willing to experiment as a band?
I would say definitely the latter. And one of our last projects, or I guess once this album comes out, it'll be two albums ago. I'm pretty sure each song on that album was a different genre. We definitely started out different than we are now. I would say, a lot more bluesy. And then, you know, we started to experiment a little bit more, did some folkier stuff, some indie stuff, and now we kind of landed where we are now, which I'm kind of afraid to peg, because usually I'm a little bit off base.
Hanging out with us on the show is Nick Weber, lead singer of Vancouver rock band Pigeon Park. Make sure to check out their website, pigeonparkmusic.com. I wanted to ask you, Nick, as a lead singer, do you feel like there's extra either pressure or responsibility on your shoulders to sort of be the face of the band, if you will? Because it feels like no matter what bands we talk about, there's always usually somebody that sort of shines through. And do you think that falls upon you?
I don't really feel that way. I think everybody in our band really pulls their weight and makes everybody else feel like we're on an even keel. And I always know that the guys that I'm on stage with, I have a lot of trust in them. And I think that helps, you know, deal with that kind of aspect of music. You know, it shouldn't be something that is in the back of your mind all the time, because I think it'll eat at you. But I mean, there's definitely a little bit of, I don't know if responsibility is the right word, but you know, there might be a little bit more attention. And what lead singer doesn't like a little attention, I guess.
When it comes to you and sort of, you know, protecting your vocals, if you will, because obviously you're out, you know, performing and you know, singing for hours on end, is it important for you? Because I know being in a rock band, obviously you're a rock band, so you've got, you know, late nights and long days. Do you have like a routine down that you need to sort of follow to sort of make sure you're staying healthy? Because I almost feel like in this day and age in the music industry, you almost really need to consider yourself an athlete.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You have to treat your body with at least a minimal amount of respect in order to make it through a lengthy tour. I don't have any particular remedies and stuff like that. I mean, you know, I always have some throat candies around and some tea and stuff like that. And to be truthfully honest, before I go on stage, you know, a little shot of Jameson's usually helps me warm up. I know that's probably not the best way to do it, but at least for right now, I'm still able to get away with doing that. And if I need to make any changes, I'll adapt accordingly.
How important is it for you guys to stay in Vancouver? Obviously, that's a well-known city for rock acts to sort of come out at, you know, or to come from. Do you feel like that's a place that you guys are going to stay, or do you think you will make the trek to, like, Los Angeles or Seattle or New York? Like, do you think you can stay where you're at and do as well as you want to do?
I think, actually, just before we won the Seeds contest, we were planning on making a move to the UK and kind of make a new start there and see if we could shake things up and make some waves somewhere else. Vancouver's kind of a tricky place. It seems like its musical loyalty kind of lies spread over a lot of genre and stuff like that. And I just feel like there's not necessarily the amount of interest in live music as there is in some other places, even in Canada, like Toronto or what have you. And I think eventually there is a move in our future. I mean, I love Vancouver. I've lived in BC my whole life, and I don't particularly want to move myself, but if it comes down to doing something for the greater good of the band, then I know all the guys are on the same page of making a better go at it somewhere else.
What have you learned crossing the country? Because I read that obviously you guys have been on at least two tours, to my understanding, to sort of, you know, across the land. Was it interesting to sort of see the different audience react, you know, reactions? And did you notice that? Like, did you notice the crowds different in Toronto, you know, versus Vancouver, or even some of the smaller prairie provinces?
Yeah, well, the difference being that people showed up, I think, is a main factor. We've been lucky enough to tour across the country. I think I feel like we're coming up on 5 or 6 times. You know, playing. The first time we went across the country, it was a lot of playing to bartenders and stuff like that. And I think that's where you kind of find out who you are as a band and if you can hack it, because you're not necessarily getting that high that you want from the crowd going across the country playing to no one. But in the last few times that we've gone, you know, we're getting better shows. You know, we've been lucky enough to tour with people like the Tea Party. We get to play in front of bigger crowds and kind of see how our music does with people hearing us for the first time. And it's only been good, which is, you know, you can't really ask for much more than that.
Joining us on the show is Nick Weber, lead singer of Vancouver rock band Pigeon Park. Check out their website, pigeonparkmusic.com. Your latest single, Walk Alone, what does it mean to you, Nick, and what do you want people to sort of, you know, subscribe from it?
Well, I think, the whole album is called Stripes, and it's about earning your stripes and earning your place in the world. And Walk Alone kind of touches on a different side of that, which is earning stripes through pain, in this case, particularly heartache. And yes, you know, it's a very widely understood subject, and for me personally, it definitely has ties to things that have happened in my life recently. And without it being a cliche breakup song, I think people can listen to it and kind of relate. You know, it's like I said, it's something that a lot of people have gone through, and I just I hope it helps. I don't know if it's going to, but I hope it does.
Was putting this EP together then kind of like musical therapy for you? Because, like, you know, I'm fortunate I get to interview a lot of artists, and it always sounds like, you know, instead of going to the shrink, they go to the pen and paper and work it out that way. Is that something that you would say happens to you and the guys in the band?
Definitely. I think, especially being as lads, we're a little bit stubborn. I don't know if I'll be lying down on the couch anytime soon. But, yeah, you know, it's very therapeutic for me. And, you know, just playing music in general is a big release for all of us. And I wouldn't trade it for anything else. I don't really get that feeling or that release from anything else. So I think it's all very important to us to write music and stuff like that, because I think it keeps us in check emotionally.
What's your take on the music industry with regards to singles versus albums? Because I know, you know, I'm actually a DJ on a top 40 radio station, and it just seems like singles right now for the pop and hip hop and dance realm is sort of where it's at, as opposed to releasing full albums. Do you feel that's the same sort of situation on the rock side of things? Like, you need to put out some strong singles and then maybe do a full album?
Absolutely. You definitely have to adapt to the way the music industry is today, and pretty much exactly how you put it. we're just kind of going through the motions musically, and I think really starting to find our groove, and we'll do whatever it takes to take our music to the next level. And if that means that we have to write a strong single, then so be it. I mean, you know, we'd love to do a double disc concept album, but I don't know if anybody's really particularly interested in that kind of stuff nowadays.
You've opened for, you know, some pretty cool acts, including Aerosmith and Slash, obviously formerly of Guns N' Roses. What was it like opening for such established acts? And did you learn anything from watching how they work a show, work a crowd?
Well, I can definitely say that I've seen Aerosmith in concert twice before we ended up playing with them. And like, you know, like I said at the beginning, my personal music influences, Aerosmith is a big one. It's just, it's a trip, you know. You listen to these guys growing up your whole life, and they almost seem like movie characters. They're not real until you're walking backstage and you see them walking by you, kind of thing. And you know, those guys are true professionals and legends, and you can learn something new from watching a set every night. You know, playing with the Tea Party too, and Sam Roberts, Big Wreck, all those guys are so good at what they do. And I think it's just about kind of worrying about what you do, but making sure that your work ethic is in check. And I think as long as you still love the music, you know, you can get to that point. And there was a lot of time before then where I think we weren't really sure if we could, but being able to share the stage with people like that makes you have a little bit more confidence in your abilities and in our music.
Now, before I let you go, what would you say would be some longer term goals for Pigeon Park, like within the next year or two? Like, where do you guys want to see yourselves?
Well, we haven't had a chance to really take our music outside of Canada. I mean, once we release the album in June and, make a couple trips across the country again. Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all love to kind of, you know, break into the U.S. or take it over to Europe or anywhere, really. I just want to experience new things with the boys. And, yeah, I think we'd love to make a full-length album and, you know, just make sure that our music and our live show is constantly evolving and getting better and just being able to rock new crowds.
Awesome. Nick, thank you so much for spending time with us, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Nick Weber, lead singer of Vancouver rock band Pigeon Park. Again, check out their website, pigeonparkmusic.com.
Hey, this is Nick from Pigeon Park, and you're hanging out with Kelly Alexander on The Kelly Alexander Show.
You want the truth, what if it's hard to handle? This used to be all that I stand for. You do your best, always wanting more. I might be the last one left, you get what you pay for. Thought you'd be the last one I would ever wake up for. It might be better if you walk on, and it hurts to know you're there. You pay for. Thought you'd be the last one I would ever wake up for. It might be better if you walk on, and it hurts to know you're letting go. I feel this emptiness is closing in. Nobody else will ever take your place.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
As always, thank you so much for spending time with us on the show, and a big thank you going out to my guests, Clean Bandit, The Angry Kids, and Pigeon Park. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Mike Murdoch. Each relationship nurtures a strength or weakness within you. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, our YouTube channel, which features our interviews, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.